And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Eleazar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom, Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Senab, king of Admah, Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is, Zoar. All these joined together in the valley of Siddim, that is, the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. In the 14th year, Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him came and attacked the Rephaim in Ashertoth, Kerneam, the Zuzim in Ham, the Emim in Shiva, Kirathaim, and the Horites in their mountain of Seir as far as El Paran, which is by the wilderness. Then they turned back and came to En Mishpah, that is, Kadesh, and attacked all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites who dwelt in Hazazon Tamar, and the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Admah, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is, Zoar, went out and joined together in battle in the valley of Siddim against Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of nations, Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar, 4 kings against 5. Now, the valley of Siddim was full of asphalt pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled. Some fell there, and the remainder fled to the mountains. Then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way. They also took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. Then one who had escaped came and told Abram, the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, and brother of Aner, and they were allies with Abram. Now, when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 380 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. So he brought back all the goods, and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the women and the people. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him at the valley of Sheva, that is, the king's valley, after his return from the defeat of Chedorlaomer, the kings who were with him. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand." And he gave him a tithe of all. Now the king of Sodom said to Abram, "Give me the persons, and take the goods for yourself." But Abram said to the king of Sodom, "I have raised my hand to the Lord, God Most High, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will take nothing from a thread to a sandal strap, and that I will not take anything that is yours, lest you should say, 'I have made Abram rich,' except only what the young men have eaten and the portion of the men who went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre. Let them take their portion."
I know that many of you probably are not aware of this, so I'm going to tell you anyway. You know, the Jewish teachings is that Abraham went to war against Nimrod and defeated him. And they brace it upon this particular area. Now, the reason why it's important, because we must understand something about the Word of God. It does not tell us that. So we must yield to what the Word of God has to say. Now, understand this thing. How many of you remember who Nimrod is? Mm-hmm. What was he noted for?
Violence.
All right.
Confusion, baby.
What was his major thing he did?
Set up a kingdom.
Kingdom.
What does his name mean? Tyrant to the face of Elohim. All right. So, and what did Elohim do? He brought in his secret weapon. I love to use that word. And, of course, now, Nimrod didn't just have one kingdom, did he? Remember, the scriptures, first time the word kingdom or his kingdom shows up is in Nimrod. There was no kingdom before. He was the very first one. And in this battle he had... And he had to build four other kingdoms. Remember that? Four other kingdoms. Inside and between where? What's Shinar? Shinar? What does it mean?
Between the rivers.
Between the rivers. Okay, we get that straightened out. So now we're here in this chapter. And we have another king. First verse says what? What's the king's name? Arphel. And where is he from? King of Shinar. He's not the same one as Nimrod. Different man, different name, different meaning. That's why it's important for us to take a look at what is written here. And based upon what is written here, we need to kind of take and say, okay, what does his name mean? It doesn't mean a tyrant. What does his name mean? I'm sorry, what?
Was that between the rivers?
Yeah, the guy between the rivers. You have it there?
Is that who we're talking about?
Yeah. Sayer of darkness. It's a little different than a tyrant, right? Now, don't think it means hoshech. It means sayer of dark things. Now, he was most prominent of the four kings that are listed here. All right, so keep those things in mind. The next king was what? Arioch. Arioch. Which means, first, it's a lion-like. Very forceful and attackful. He attacks things. That's all it means. And he's from the land of called Elasar. Elasar. Elasar means... God is a chastener. That's all that means. So God chastens something. Now, remember, these names come about sometimes after the event and not before the event. All right? So you kind of get this place of, we'll get the word chastener later, because you find out where those guys went.
Where do you get the meanings of these names?
What's the purpose of meaning of the names?
No, where do you get them?
I've been some research and knowing, looking at Hebrew and looking at breaking down those words and going through different dictionaries. That's where you get them from. You have to really do some hunting and some working. You know, you don't have to remember these names. All you have to know is the identification names, because it helps us to understand a picture of what we have. Trying to get this is don't come up with the idea or have this concept that Nimrod was one of them. He wasn't. Different person. Nimrod was a whole lot more powerful. Now, before we begin, we'll cut the other two is Chador Alaomer. All that means is a handful of sheaves. Don't ask me. I don't fully understand what that means. But he's from a place called Elmar. What we get the word Olam from. Okay. is the son of... Who was the son of? He was the son of Shem. The land where the guy was king is, was the land in which where one of Shem's sons dwelt. That territory. And it means that which is eternity. That's what brood, that's what when Shem named his son, he named his son, in a sense, eternity. Okay? Kind of interesting word. And of course, title means fearfulness. And the king of nations, which means this particular Hebrew word, means a group of fighting people, people that fight. So he had his renegades, he had his army. So he had these four kings. Now, why must we learn these things? Well, because it's important to understand. But before we go any farther on this, I want to ask you a question. How many years has passed since the flood? Huh?
Did you say 306? Oh, no,
let me talk
about something else.
No, that was an error. That one is... So, well, put this way, it was less than 500 years. Just remember, it's less than 500 years.
Last week, 367 was the...
Two weeks ago, 367. Okay. I corrected that one because it's not really this. More like 435. Okay. I found a little error in the addition. But we're not very far away from the flood, are we? And so we had to keep in our minds, okay, what's going on here? How many people do you think were on the face of the earth at this point in time? 500 years since the flood. How many people on the face of the earth do you think were? Mm-hmm. Billions?
Trillions.
Millions?
Trillions.
Thousands. Maybe 100,000 perhaps. We're really stretching it. We're only talking, remember, only three, six people could reproduce.
Right.
All right? From the time of flood onward. So don't make this number so huge out of reality that it makes no sense. Let's kind of talk about what makes sense. So 500 years gone on the line, yes.
Well, each woman would have had to have 45 children to do that.
That's another issue. We'll get to that. We'll get to that answer later. We'll reach that point later. That's a funny answer because your mathematical doesn't come out. I know it's just kind of come to you. We're not there to tell you that mathematical figure yet, okay, because it's not in this chapter. But I want you to keep in mind that there weren't in the incredible, uncountable number of people. Where did most of them live? Between the two rivers. And in Egypt. And in what's called today the Middle East or the Palestine area, they call it, or Israel today. They weren't scattered into China, Africa, North America, South America. There weren't that many people. And remember what caused them to scatter? They were all together on the spot. What caused them to scatter? The secret weapon. And then they scattered, right? And so the secret weapon was in between, somewhere between the, probably 200, 300 years later, after the flood, in comes the secret weapon. And then they scattered. So you got pictures in your mind. They weren't massive billions of people. They probably were not even a million. They're probably maybe 100,000. Maybe plus or minus, you know? So, the reason why I'm doing this figure is because you look at these empires, these kings, they weren't kings of a massive, huge army. They were just kings of what we would consider today a small army. But it was big for them at that point in time because it was not very many people on the face of the earth.
Enough to get the job done.
I'm sorry, what?
Enough to get the job done.
Enough to get the job done. And they were warriors. They were men of war, you know? And remember I've told you last 2 weeks ago? Everything from paganology began with Nimrod. Before it, it wasn't there. It began afterwards. And all these kings we're reading about, very fascinating now. You'll find out their names are very fascinating as we get into the five kings. Very fascinating. Tells you a bit. Now, laws of time. What does the word Sodom mean? I told you last week. Don't use the modern terminology of Sodom today. What does Sodom mean in Hebrew? Burning.
Burning.
So all that word means burning. So God is named after, not before. All right? So it was ascribed the town that's burning. That's why God is named. It's how it's got to stay. Now, we're going to find out a little bit about the leadership to have a little bit of answering, but we're not there yet to complete one. Where are we at now? We're in verse 2. Now, the name's important. What happens? Now, let me ask you a question. When a name shows up in the biblical writings, is it just any Tom, Dick, or Harry?
No.
It's a very important, prominent person who's either done tremendous amount of evil or has absolutely done tremendous amount of good. Nothing in between. Now, you and I would not be mentioned in the Bible because we are not men of renown or ladies of renown. I mean, unimportant. You didn't make a dent. Now, what does Abram mean for those who do not know? The exalted father. That really wasn't his name when he was born. They didn't name him that. Mama and daddy didn't name him exalted father. He became one because the Eternal said when he first introduced himself, I'm going to exalt you. And he became exalted because the hand of the word, the power of God. Abraham was the most powerful, one of the most powerful men in the history of mankind. But we're going to go to chapter 2, verse 2 here. And he says, and they made war with Bela, king of Sodom. I told you what Sodom means, is burning. You know what Bela means? Son of evil. Interesting word, isn't it? Okay, now listen to these names because it helps you. Remember this guy's names. Bela, son of evil. All right. And then there's Bersha, the king of Gomorrah. What does Gomorrah mean? It means submission. So all it means is submission. To whom?
Sodom.
To Bersha, which means with equity. With equity. Now let's go on.
Like fair?
Like Pharaoh.
Like being fair?
Like being fair, right? And there's Shinar, which is the king of Ammon. Ammon means what? Real simple. Means red. Now, we have a state called Colorado. It's called Colorado because it means a red. It's a red state. A lot of red dirt there. And his name means father has turned. Okay. Then there's Zulim, the gazelle, king of Bela, which later says it's what?
Zoar.
What does Zoar mean? It was a name named afterwards, not before. You remember what Lot said? Can I go to
the small town.
In Hebrew, it doesn't mean small. The insignificant one. This king really was insignificant in the matter. So when you look at these four people, these four kings, don't think of them as being extremely powerful. The one that's most powerful of the bunch was, of course, Bera, the evil one. Now, what did Abraham say about this man? You forgot already. All right, we'll get there. Of course, it was 12 years they served, and so on and so forth. They went through different kings. There's the word Raphaim in verse 5. That means giants. Giants, by the way, is very common in the Bible. It's without, you'll find it all over the place. If they were just, quote, giants during the time of David. David had to fight against the giants. And they were just very large people, very big in size. But they were from a place called, verse 5, Ashtaroth Kardaim. What's Ashtaroth mean?
That's a female goddess.
It means star. Just star, okay? And so they already were worshiping stars, okay? Now, it's very fascinating to know this because it's kind of interesting. Now, what we have here is this king, though, from from Shinar, went on the march. First thing he did, he has not attacked yet the five kings. He is attacking on the way. All these places and towns that we have here being listed, those are what's called on the other side of Jordan. Jordan didn't exist as the country at that point in time, but the river Jordan. So this from the being is between the two rivers. What's the two rivers talking about? Tigris and Euphrates. So they started advancing westward toward, of course, Sodom and Gomorrah. They rebelled, right? But they had to confront and take over other territories as they went on their way. And they did. They managed to wipe out an awful lot of countries. They became more powerful, more strong. But they were still, don't think of the giant thing like Julius Caesar. He wasn't that big. But these two places, and the Stars of Horn, that's what these place was called, the Stars or Stars of Horn. There's two of them there, or two peaks, okay? That's all that means. And then, of course, they went and they conquered the Zuzim and the Emims. The Emims, by the way, means terrorist. Very fascinating word. And verse 6, the Horite. Who are the Horites? Now, why do I want you to know these things? Because words here are going to come together when we go to the book of Exodus. It means what? It means cave dwellers. And this area was where we would call in Saudi Arabia, the southern portion of it, near the Gulf, Aqaba. Okay? And the next place is named is El Paran. Now, El Paran historically has been found where it's at. Where do you think El Paran is? It's where. I'm sorry, what?
It could be the mountain because El Paran means the face of God.
No, this is not what it is. Don't get those words. That is not what it means. It means strength. Not El. It's not Aleph. It's not an Aleph Lamed here. It's not an Aleph Lamed on this word. It has to do with oak or strength or palm. Also has to do with the palm. Okay. Not the tree, but the palm of your hand. Meaning strength. Now, the reason why it's called that is because you got fingers.
Yeah.
They don't work without the palm.
Mm-hmm.
The strength of the fingers is in the palm.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that name got its message.
El Paran means that?
Yeah. El Paran means that. Which is by the...
wilderness.
All right. Now... when we get into the book of Exodus, well, I'll reverse this back again. I'm going to tell you exactly where El Paran is. Because, see, the real Mount Sinai is not on the peninsula. The real Mount Sinai is in Saudi Arabia. And El Paran is in Saudi Arabia. You remember the caves? Why are they called caves for? What happens when the Israelites journeyed through? They went to an area, there was caves. Same exact place in the land near El Paran, near the Gulf of Aqaba. See all these messages. Now, what we're seeing here is most, when you read the book of Genesis, a lot of you have been told that Moses wrote it. It's impossible for him to write it. I'll tell you why. There are names of things here that didn't exist when he was alive. One of them, we'll find out as we go along. He did not know where the tribe of Dan was at. He had no idea where it was stationed. He had no idea where it was going to be. He didn't designate where the tribe of Dan was going to be. But here we have the man named Abram going all the way to where? Dan. How old could be Dan? Dan wouldn't even existed yet. Dan wouldn't even alive yet. Yes.
Isn't it possible, though, that the references to later places were added at a later time?
Right, later time.
Not necessarily that the whole thing was compiled at, you know, a later time, but just any references to things that were contemporary.
Right, that's what's happened. You know, like we first talked about this in the second chapter, third chapter of Genesis, the name of the four rivers. Those named the four rivers well after the flood. They weren't named the rivers before the flood. They were named the rivers well after the flood. So we're getting historical facts here. And what the authors are doing here is giving you a point and time of references of where they're at. Remember we talked about the Mamre? And what it became later known as?
Hebron.
What does Hebron mean? Making a contract or a pact with somebody else. All right. And that came named later. It even tells you later was named that. Okay. So we find out these names, these things. We have an idea of about what's going on. Now, let's continue on here. I want to go to another area. To make a long story short, verse 8, the four kings kept on going, and they went out to the king of Sodom and Gomorrah and Amor and Bethel or Zorah, and then the king, of course, took them captives. And in verse 10, in the valley of Sidom, which is a slime pit, verse 10. It means the lowest part. Sidom, what does Sidom mean? Sidom, it doesn't mean it means there's a valley of Sidom. Sidom means the flat plains, flat surfaces. But there was a valley in it, a deep valley in it. And that valley later became known as what? The Dead Sea. Became known as the Dead Sea. But at this point in time, it was just a slimy one. All right? You see how the story starts going? As history starts building up, now the name changes because what came more of a salt deposit rather than what we would call a slime pit. Okay, things that has to do with asphalt. It was more of a asphalt mine or asphalt place.
Okay. Probably where Sodom got its name from.
Actually, Sodom means burning, so it got his name afterwards.
Well,
that's where they worked. That was their form of business. Was that? That's what you're trying to say.
Sometimes asphalt pits can't catch fire.
Yeah,
all
right.
It looked
like Yellowstone. Yeah. Some of the bubbling
yeah.
fires. Sulfurous.
Yeah.
Let's move on to verse 14. And Abram heard that his brother, or his kindred, was taken captive, and he armed his trained men. That word armed, by the means, he instructed them. How did he instruct them? He instructed them exactly how he's going to maneuver. How he's going to do his attack. And the next few two verses tell you exactly in detail how Abraham did it, or Abram did it. He attacked at night. Did you notice that? He attacked at night. Caught him off guard. Attacked when they weren't expecting it. And what did he do? He chased them. And he divided himself against them. In other words, he had split his army out. And he and his servants by night smote them and pursued them to Horav, which is, in some of your translations, says in the left. But on your new translation, say it's north. No. Now, why was it called, considered in some of your translations, why we may have the word left for? Left of Damascus doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
Okay, now remember, if you their sense of orientation wasn't north. Their sense of orientation was east. So you're facing east. On your left, what's that?
Damascus, the north.
That's north. And so some of your translations will have a change in it. And instead of the word left, because that's what the Hebrew has it in there, but they're looking at a direction of we would call northeast, southwest. They call it east, south, west, north. All right? That's why you would have it. So I want to, if some of your translations may have that, you just got to know that it's not an error in Hebrew. It's you have to have a change in your thinking of the sense of direction. All right? That's all that's about. Yes. Any more questions? And Damascus. Damascus has a unique place. But before we get there, what does Hobrah mean? I'm sorry, what? That's as far as he chased them. Now, Damascus as a city didn't exist yet. But it's north of that area. And it means a hiding place. So, amen. They had to hide from Abram because they were losing the war. And of course, we know later why they lost the war. And it says there why. And it says that Elyon was doing the battle. Now, why did Abram go after the kings? What was his purpose? I'm sorry, what?
To rescue Lot.
To collect. Okay. Why? What's Lot noted for? What does his name mean?
No good. Was it the righteous one?
No. The covered one. The one that's covered. Which means he's protected and he's hidden from the enemy, from the devil. Now, he is called a righteous man. Now, we'll get into his conduct later, but we'll talk about the conduct later. Do not judge before you hear the whole case.
Yeah.
It's very, very important. Because, see, we can apologize for Lot. Why? We can overlook. Why? Well, we just look at him and see what he did and what was God's thought. What was God's reaction? What did Elohim do? What did Elohim think? Okay, that's what's important. We already learned this about Abram, right? He kept going south, too far south, went all the way into where? Egypt. What did he do? Abram did something he should have never done. But what did happen? God didn't punish him. Nor he really didn't even punish the Pharaoh. He just gave real strict warning to the Pharaoh by giving him a plague. We call it plague. The plague is an overused word. It doesn't mean plague. If you think plague, he gave him a lot. He gave him a bop on the head. He gave him a strike. That's where the Hebrew word for plague means a strike or a blow. And it could be anything on the sun you want to think of. And Pharaoh knew immediately that it was from what? Some pagan god? What did he say? From Elohim. He knew it. Why? They weren't that far from the flood. They knew who destroyed the world. They knew who it took place. That was not ignorant knowledge. This reason why the Apostle Paul writes in the book of Romans, they are without excuse. They are without excuse. Why? The very beginning. They are without excuse. They deliberately did and go against contrary. Just like Cain went against God. It's not a saying, oh, I didn't know I did anything wrong. I was going out deliberately against it. Now, generation after generation after generation, you get a lot of innocent people suffering from their actions. But that's a different issue. God will deal with these people when it's time. But I want to stop here for just a moment. Just a very interesting fight. Word. Verse 17. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him, meaning Abram, after he turned from the slaughter of Chedor Daoram and the kings that were with him in the valley of Sheba, which means a level place, which is the. What does yours say? King's Valley or the King's Dale, the Dale of the Valley, or the Dale of the King, the King's Dale. Now, who came out?
The King of Sodom.
Who came out? He went to meet him there. Why was Abraham there for? He went to the valley where Melchizedek was going to be. Okay, he didn't go there because Sodom was going to go there, or the king of Sodom. King Sodom went there because that's where Abraham went. What did Abraham go there for? To meet Melchizedek. What's Melchizedek mean?
King of righteousness.
And what's the next name?
King of what? Peace.
King of peace. Not a king of a city, king of peace. King of righteousness. Righteousness is not a name of a town. King of peace is not a name of a town. It's the name of what the person is. Who else holds that title? The Messiah holds the same exact identical title. We can't go too very far in that today. Probably we'll cover that next week in more detail. Because a lot of you probably have not known who Melchizedek is, what the name means, and why Abraham was there. But you remember what the Messiah said? What did he say? Abraham was what?
Before Abraham was.
Yeah, but what was Abraham waiting?
Yeah, Abraham saw my day.
Abraham saw my day. Wow, when did he see it? That's right there. Now, we'll get in the book of Hebrews in more detail next week, but I just wanted to get the highlights. There's very something interesting about this individual called Melchizedek Melch Shalom. Melchizedek Melch Shalom. Melch means king. Melchizedek means king of righteousness. Melchizedek Shalom means king of peace. And those titles are held by only one person. And that is the El Elyon High Priest. Always was a priesthood. It always was. Long before there was a tribe of Levites. There always was a priesthood. It never stopped. It never ended. This is the first time we have an introduction of an individual who's called and being called a priest. All right? It's a very important word. Now, why do you think Melchizedek was there? What was he there for? Oh, to give Abraham a blessing. Yes, we understand that. Okay, what else? What else? No, that's what Abraham did to him. I'm talking about Melchizedek.
I think Abraham had planned to bring a blessing or to worship the Lord after that battle was over, and then he wound up meeting Melchizedek because of that.
Yes.
Well, for one thing, he sets, in verse 18, he sets messianic symbols out there.
Did you catch that?
Yeah.
No, it's in that order. When we do our blessings, we have the bread first, wine second. Why? Because established here, during the Messiah, what did he do first? The bread and then the wine. Why reverse it? Yes, Jeff.
Well, also in verse 20, saying there that the Most High God who has delivered your enemies into your hand.
Okay, so this is why he went there. He went there to give praise unto, and he got something in exchange. And what did he get in exchange? That is Elohim, the God of hell, El Elyon, is one that delivered your enemies into your hand. Abraham was not a warrior. Who was a warrior? The king of between the two rivers. Now, when Abram had to, quote, train his men to go to war, I mean, we're talking a guy who likes a farmer. How would he know how to fight? How do you know what to do? Did he just think about it and says, oh, let's go? The very beginning, God began to talk with him when he was 75 years of age. And God started talking to Abram. He didn't talk to anybody else. And so Mamre became the place known as Hebron, which means there was a deal made there. Abram called them together. Do you think that the creator of heaven and earth might have talked to him? How to fight? When to do it? How to go to battle? How to go to war? We have examples after examples that Daniel goes through the book of Judges and Joshua and Judges and other places that we get. And he gets far into David and how far. That when they go to God and ask him the questions, guess what? God gets the answer. But what happens when they just go out on their own and do something that they didn't confront God with? What happened? That's a failure. It didn't work.
They got cursed too.
Huh?
They got cursed too.
They got cursed. Now, I hear. So we know that why would he go to this valley for? It wasn't the place where he lived. But he went there to meet the priest of the high Most High God. It wasn't just by happenstance. He went to the valley of the king. Not the valley of the king of Sodom. Not the valley of the king of Gomorrah. But the valley of the king of Shalom.
Is that the king's day?
Valley of the king of righteousness. Yes.
So in a sense, those kings of Sodom, Gomorrah, etc. got a little bit of a wake-up call before the final judgment.
Before the final judgment. Now, that's a very important thing he's telling you about. Because listen to what Abraham said. Now, what was the king's name of Sodom? Bera. What does it mean?
Evil. The evil one?
No, yes.
I just think it's interesting also that this is a messianic, you know, appearance at this time, because this was crucial. I mean, basically, you've got the forces of evil rising up, right? Because this is God's whole plan of deliverance. And it's crucial, because if they had won, it would have been a different outcome. Lot wouldn't have been saved. Abraham might have ended up being kicked out. But this is crucial that Yeshua, who is the deliverer, delivered his people at this point in history. Otherwise,
he delivered,
it would have all been...
Right. The most important person he delivered was Lot. He delivered other people, yes. People of Sodom, people of Gomorrah, people of Zorah. He delivered them too. But he didn't go to war to deliver them. He didn't go fight the five kings to deliver Sodom and Gomorrah and all those people out of their calamity. He went because a righteous man was captured. Now, I'll tell you just a little something about how God looks at war. Yes?
I mean, you see that later with when Abraham's talking with God, in that, you know, they were saying, well, would you spare these cities for the sake of a few righteous people? So you see in a sense that that the mercy that people who are even fighting against God get because of the few righteous people that are in their midst.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of tells you a little bit what's going on. You have a good picture, because we're leading up to Sodom and Gomorrah in the next few chapters. But you understand the picture here of the war that took place. And it was because God had something to say about it. And he made his intervention with it. And he made his interventions. What did he do? He gave a message, a symbol message to Abram. And Abraham understood it completely. Now, but not all. Abraham said something else. I will not go there to Melchizedek. We'll still talk about that next week. But he says, the Most High God. Or El Elyon. We got that one of these signs up here. Over here. Yeah, right there. What does Elyon mean?
Most
elevated. Technical word, most elevated. Not just high, but most elevated. So high. His elevation, his presence is so What does it say? My ways are far higher than your ways. My thoughts are your God down. Mine's way up here, you know. If you want to know what I think, you got to think where I'm at, you know. And the phrase, soar like an eagle, come up thee and soar like an eagle, means you've got to come up here and see what I see. I will show you everything that I see. You've got to get off of that world you're in and fly up there, and you can soar like an eagle. And you can begin to learn and understand by seeing, not only hearing, all right, but seeing. It's called insight.
Yeah.
Yes?
That actually gives insight into, I think it's Isaiah 14, where Satan says, I will ascend above the most high.
And he couldn't, but right.
Early on. So he was even higher than the highs. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's just kind of interesting how these words all come together a little bit. And so when we keep on going here, and he says, I have lifted up my hand, verse 22. This is very fascinating now, verse 21 first. The king of Bera, the son of evil, of Sodom, said unto him, unto Abram, give me the persons and take goods for yourself. Now, what was Abram's response to this son of evil? I have lifted my hands unto, actually he didn't know by the name, but unto El Elyon, the possessor of heaven and earth. Now why would he want to tell that to that king for?
Don't give the devil a hold on anything.
You are son of evil. Why should I
take
anything from an evil thing? Okay. Remember, Abraham has this point in time. We don't know how many years has gone by. We know it's not 25 years yet because Isaac's not been born. Yes.
Well, it's also another testimony, just like Isim mentioned earlier, as to who is responsible for the victory, who is responsible for everything here.
When did he lift up his hands? Wait, does it say there? He would have lifted up his hands long time ago when he went to war. He lifted up his... Now, what does that mean? Lift up your hands to God. I surrender. I'm sorry, what?
Basically, giving it up. Lifting upward.
Lifting upward.
Like a child does.
Well, those are symbolism, but also the idea that when you raise your hands up toward God, you're asking Him to come down and help me. You're open, my arms are open wide for you to come. And we need to think that in our own lives. When we want God to come into our lives, symbolically, you're lifting up your hands and ask God to come. And guess what He does?
He comes.
If you are responsive to Him, and hear what He has, He's going to come. Which is, I will bend my ear down and hear what you have to say. If it's a broken and contrite spirit. All right. In the case with Abram, when he lifted up his hands, it doesn't tell us when, but I'm saying I don't think it was the one and only time. Every time he gave an offering, the whole offering, he's lifting something up, elevating something up to God, right? And so he's giving glory unto God. Now we say Abraham does make mistakes. We saw him make mistakes. He starts making less and less and less as we go along. Yes.
Are you going to go on to the last verse, though? Why did he give this young man those potions that were...
I'm sorry, where are we at now?
The last verse of 24.
Oh!
Why would he give his fellow
the potion
of...
Why would he give a tenth of all he had?
No. Why did Abraham allow his young men to get a portion...
Why not?
Well, if when he was upset.
No, go ahead and give the men that fought for me what you want to give them, but don't give it to me. Okay.
I thought his men all believed the way Abraham.
Oh no. Sorry, I rattled off all those foreign words. I didn't mean to say that in a what I meant is that only God talked to Abram. He didn't call anybody else, didn't talk to anybody else. And that's why the Melchizedek says that blessed be all Abram of El Elyon, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be Elyon, who delivered your enemies into your hands. Now, he didn't say into your other two companions that went with you to go to war with you against them. Abraham took charge of the entire warfare. Mm-hmm. His other two friends, they were his friends, they were his companions, that's what the word means, companion, they were there with him. Mm-hmm. But Abraham took total command. How would he know how to fight? He listened to El Elyon. And now, that means all the men should get paid for their job and what they do. The only one that really has a believing thing in there, only one of his servants came close to believing. That's later on, it's we'll get there. He was going to give up his son. You know, Abram said, why don't you take my Eleazar's son as the firstborn? It's the only one in that group that went all the way to the other side of the, river to be able to get a hold of a woman for Isaac. But that's the end of the story. Okay, what does this tell you, though? Why did Abraham say it's okay to give everybody else, but not to me?
Oh, well, I said before, the devil, why should we get anything from the devil? Why should he get anything of evil
from
those that came?
Why would his men get it, but not him?
Well, he's been defeated. That was the custom in those days. When if you've got two warring factions, two warring tribes, the victor took the spoils.
Oh, yeah. But Abraham said he didn't want any part of that.
Yeah,
the other guys, that they took it to me like, well, they didn't even have the same covering that Lot had then.
No, because they weren't righteous.
Well, the people were bad. Their riches necessarily weren't bad. You see what I'm saying? It's the spoil.
Yeah, we talk about Abraham's men, maybe. It's just sort of freak. Is that right? Abraham's is my young men.
About his two young men in the end, he said, give them. They can take what they want, but for me, I'm not taking any of it.
For himself, he's not.
The young men could have said, I don't want it either.
Why? It says there, verse 34, why? Because you would say, I have made Abram rich. Because he knew something about this guy. He's downright evil. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, Abram already was rich.
True.
Oh, correct.
And so he didn't want anyone to be able to say that this guy had made him rich rather than him being already wealthy in his own right. But I think more importantly, it's that not being entangled with evil. And the other thing, I think, the third part of it, I think, is that, yeah, even though Abram was, I guess you might say, the four-star general of this whole thing, those two other kings or those two other companions that went with him, they had the right to make their own decision whether they wanted to have any kind of alliance with the king of Sodom or not. And there'd be something to be said for the fact that why would I want an alliance with him when he lost to those people?
They want alliance. They want alliance with Abraham, not alliance with Melchizedek.
Yeah. Or, you know, why would anybody want an alliance with the king of Sodom anyway? He's already lost one battle, so why would we want an alliance with him? We'll right. stick with Abraham. But he left it up to them to make that choice as to whether they would take part of the spoils or not, instead of just making
it. Just don't try to. One more thing to keep in mind, though, is that like when God deals with individual people here in this room, you can't have others who are in the family or friends or relatives or acquaintances or even former employees or employers do what you do. Because you don't have that authority.
There's a very practical issue here, though.
I'm sorry, what?
Because there's a practical issue in him saying, I don't want you saying I made Abraham rich.
To Abraham.
At this period, even when Abraham left Ur, it's a period of like social unrest. You've got all of these tribes. They're all going to battle. It's a constant thing.
Correct.
They raid, you raid. They raid, you raid. By refusing to take anything, you're actually, any grudge, any future grudge that would cause this Bella to attack Abraham has been diminished.
Her question wasn't that.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is, because it was important for Abraham. He didn't want to be attacked again. In fact, what God was going to have him do was to settle and grow and build a family and so on and so forth.
And his men did not go to the Valley of the King to get a blessing.
Yeah.
That wasn't their job. Yes.
I was going to ask, wasn't it because of covenant? Because Abraham had covenant with...
Correct. He had a covenant. There was agreement between God and him. His men he had with him, there was no covenant.
Yes.
There was no agreement. Yes.
Well, it could just be simple. I mean, it says here at one point, only what they've already eaten. Well, what are they going to do? Cough it up? They've already eaten it. So, and the other sense is like, okay, well, they also got their portion. Well, their portion is not a kingly portion. It's just basically, okay, they got paid, they ate, let them go.
Let them go.
And that's all I want.
That's all
but don't have to hit Abram. Rest.
And Abraham was a leader, not a dictator. You don't designate someone else to have sacrifice just because you are making a sacrifice.
Yeah.
Right, only Abraham gave the sacrifice, not his men. Remember when he left Ur? What did he take with him?
His whole family.
Everything. All he owned, all this, anything he took. All his wealth, everything he had, he brought with him. He didn't have a quick, fast pack going. He took everything. A grab bag, what she calls it. He took everything. When God said to leave, he says, okay. He took everything he had. Everything he owned. He couldn't move. It was a house. Couldn't move the house. That's the only thing he had to leave behind. Everything else he took with him. All his, quote, all his gold, all his silver, all his cattle, all his sheep, all his goats, all his men servants, all his men. Remember, Abraham's father was what kind of a person?
Wealthy.
Wealthy, very successful, very productive.
Yeah.
He was such an engineer. He built the town. He established it. He had authority. He ruled. And he was not an idiot.
Right.
He was a very wealthy, smart, intelligent human being. And therefore, Abraham, like any son, would benefit from a very profitable, productive father. He would learn from his father how to be successful himself, even before God called him at 75. You know what I'm saying?
If he'd have gone out without anything, wouldn't God have supplied him with those things? Or
wasn't required. Abraham's trial wasn't a trial of destitution with nothing.
That's right.
His trial was entirely different. What was his trial about?
Faith.
Huh?
It was faith.
Faith. Simple as that. Now we make it simple, but was it a piece of cake for him?
No.
Let me tell you.
No.
He had to learn obedience by the things that happened in his life. Do you think he really thought, oh, I'm going to go to war now? Do you think he wanted to go to war? Do you think he likes to go to war? Do you think he's a warrior? Think he's a general that likes to go out and slaughter people? No. He had to learn to do it, and he had to go to Elyon to find out exactly how to fight and win. Remember, he divided his army. And he attacked at night. Caught him completely off guard. Why attack at night?
Can't see you coming.
Why attack at night?
Surprise.
You have a surprise, and you're... Yes.
Well, he went and he wiped out a guy who was steeped in darkness at night. A lot of irony there.
When is the Messiah going to come? When it's a thief in the night. God works that way. He attacks at night. He attacks in Hoshech. He attacks when you are not ready for it. He attacks when you are thinking everything is nice, I'll take a nap. I'm having funny. But isn't that true?
Yeah.
Whether spiritual or literal, in the case with Even David had a fight at night. Yes.
I was just thinking about you. This is the day before night vision goggles. So one thing about fighting at night is that with the element of surprise, you can hide your inferior numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
You're saying peace and safety.
Peace and safety. Yes. Same. It's like at night. Oh, peace, peace, safe, safe. Guess what's going to happen in the world? They're in Hosea. Yes.
Jacob had to fight at night, too. And there's something about fighting. We fight battles in darkness.
Yeah. We're not. Our battle is not. The battles that we fight right now are not in the light. They're in the dark period.
Always. All right. I'm way over time. I'm going to ruin Daniel's time here. Okay, next week I'm going to go in depth on Melchizedek. For those who do not know enough about him, I'm going to go into detail what name means, what Hebrews, book of Hebrews says about him, so we have a picture, a complete picture of just what this individual was and why it was so important and why his name is mentioned in the book of Psalms.